There we go.
We are live.
Yeah.
Okay. Good evening, everyone. We will call to order the December meeting of the Transportation Commission of the City of Alexandria for tonight, December 18th. We will begin with the public comment period. Is there anyone that wishes to make a comment? With no one indicating same, we will close out the public comment period and move on to the minutes. Has everyone had an opportunity to review the minutes? And if there are no corrections, changes, additions, revisions, etc., do we have a motion to accept as presented?
Second.
Second?
I'll second.
Oh, great. Okay. Any discussion? All in favor of passing as presented?
Aye.
Any opposed? Minutes are adopted. Okay. Commission updates. I'll go around the room, but starting with Commissioner Gonzalez, and we'll go to his right.
Nothing from the landmark thing yet. There's going to be a meeting in January, February. I got the notification a couple days ago, so I'll keep the commission updated as to kind of how that progresses and develop.
Thank you.
Nothing at the
moment. Nothing
for you, Pi Meg, always have.
I was going to say, anything about the Potomac Yard project of interest?
I think it's in consensus, but big groundbreaking tomorrow at 2 o'clock on the movie theater side in that parking lot. We had a meeting last night. Not a lot new. Still waiting on the estimates. It's taking WMATA and the team to come up. There were two kind of options in terms. There was a kind of what was submitted, which was a simplified ramp approach, and then there was a modified option A, which was to actually have an additional kind of a node and a walkway across to the north node from the south, and everything kind of funneling into one kind of entrance point into the metro station. Because of the complexity of the estimates, this is what was explained to us last night. There's something like 310 line items that have to be estimated, and they want to do it right. So we've been assured that January's meeting we will have the estimate numbers available. But that's kind of, there's an update on construction. Construction has started because the last permit was issued from the Corps. They're at work now on site, working on the switchgear building and doing a little bit more. Some other work on the other side of the tracks as well, on the Potomac Yard side of the tracks. So that's all moving forward. And there was also approval from the Board of Architectural Review on some other elements, some more minor elements of the station. But things are moving.
Groundbreaking tomorrow. Everyone does know they're invited. Should you have the opportunity to attend?
Yeah, please.
I have a question on the options. They're only pricing the one, though, right? Is that correct? Or are they pricing all three of them still?
No, they're just really, they're doing the two options. The original option with the ramps, and then
right.
It's the modified. Yeah,
right.
Just those. Okay. Not beyond that. There was a discussion. Potomac Yard Civic Association presented, or Homeowners Association presented, a letter to the members of PIMIG last night to try to reopen the idea of going back to the drawing board on that south actual entrance across the tracks and having a south entrance into the station. But, it's just been found not cost effective, given inflation and everything else. So that's, even though it was discussion, it's not on the table. I don't know if the city wants to add anything else. Is that okay?
Thank you.
Yeah.
Commissioner Cain?
Yeah, traffic and parking board. Well, we decided on parking as usual. One of the contentious items last month was removing several parking spaces on North Pitt Street to improve sight distance out of some private driveways. And we backed off from kind of what the city was looking for and went with only removing two parking spaces. But that still ended up being a little bit of an issue for some of the other residents there. Of course, because it's removing parking. And, I don't know if that impacted you up in your part of North Old Town or not, John.
Not me personally.
But yeah. And then a couple other things. We're continuing to support the Potomac Yard Metro by removing more parking to accommodate construction. I think we were told this would be the last request for parking removal, although I've heard that there's some issues at Slater's Lane and Potomac Green Drive with the trucks and all, so I don't know if that's getting resolved somehow. And then the other thing, we approved the installation of high intensity activated crosswalk, a hawk signal on Braddock Road, somewhere between the intersection of North Early and the Minnie Howard campus. And so the city's going to be looking at that to figure the right location for that. But that should make it a lot safer for both students and residents in that part of Braddock Road to be able to cross the road. So those are the key things.
Okay.
We're not meeting in December, so there won't be anything to report.
Okay. Okay. Commissioner Schroeder, any updates since your arrival has been precisely timed to the next opening?
We met on Monday. There wasn't much related to transportation at that meeting, but I did want to update that there had been, it was up in the air about Earth Day this year, and so I just wanted to mention that they are planning Earth Day. They have a committee with staff right now, and we'll be recruiting volunteers. That has not yet happened. So they're about 3 months behind. And so they did select the same location as they had last year. I always get the name of the park wrong. But they're right around the corner from Braddock Metro. And they're already in contact with some of the folks who last year helped with the electric vehicles that came. So I think they're going to repeat some of the things that were pretty successful last year. And somebody from the EPC will be represented on that committee.
Okay, thank you.
The date's already picked too. Off my head, I want to say like May 2nd or 3rd, but it's the very first week Saturday, I think, in May.
Thank you. From the dashboard meeting that took place last Wednesday, the most significant item to report is the board's decision to provide guidance to staff to provide options for the HE2 supplement. We heard comments at the last meeting. The dashboard at a public meeting heard extensive comments about the need to maintain some coverage that was not in the original proposal based on the percentage for ridership or the percentage for coverage that they were reacting to. So it's going to be evaluated within a two-year period as to whether or not the service is actually providing a sufficient number of riders, the transportation option along that small corridor. They're looking at an AT2X extension to increase extra stops, trying to negotiate with the Pentagon staff. That's not as easy as it may sound, but they're exploring many options in order to try to provide that service. But the numbers within that area are still not that high. There was a rather significant representation of people that expressed concern about not having it. And with the modifications that have been made to the configuration, we think it's important to maintain some type of service delivery option for them.
So is the A2X going, is that going to be the preferred solution, or is that in addition to?
That's an option during the rush hour period. But for midday service, they're looking at providing a more traditional
AT2
service. Yeah. It may be called something else, right. But they're trying to, staff has been directed to provide an option.
You know, when they gave that presentation, it does seem like a no-brainer not to try to partner with DOD to, you know, utilize that bus route a little bit, you know, however they could.
They pay for it in its entirety. It's essentially a contracted service that we at Dash provide them, and to modify the demands that are being placed on this on the cost model may not warrant it being a viable alternative.
Yeah.
But we'll see how the negotiation goes. As far as that goes.
Well, that was the most noteworthy item. Okay, we will now move on to the first action item, the Fiscal 21 Transportation Demand Management Grant presentation and action item.
Okay.
Welcome to the table. Thank you very much for presenting tonight.
Oh, thank you. My name is Thomas Hammond. I'm the city's transportation demand management coordinator. I apologize in advance. I have a little bit of laryngitis. I guess we should be glad I'm not running a public health program. And what I want to talk about today was running Go Alex. So Go Alex is the city's transportation demand management program. We come here annually to ask for your support for renewing the program. We had a very big year. Not only did we realize some efficiencies in how we run our program, but we've also coordinated the city's response to the platform improvement project over the summer. And we are looking forward to continuing that success into FY 2021. And so what I'm asking for tonight is that the commission endorses to council two grant applications that we will be making to the state of Virginia to keep the program running into 2021. So for those who are new, I'm first going to explain what GoAlex is. And GoAlex is the city's transportation demand management program. So what does that mean? That means that we promote all modes of transportation within the city. We build and promote alternative transportation, whether that's transit, biking, walking, micromobility, or other items. We help encourage people to use those modes, and we assess how people are using them. We've also been involved in building out other modes, which I will get into in a little bit. We had a role in promoting water transportation in the city. And then finally, what we do is that we administer the city's transportation management plans. All of this is great to have for both reducing the number of single-occupant vehicles on the road, which is a goal that has been endorsed by both the 2008 Transportation Master Plan and I'd imagine would appear in the Alexandria Mobility Plan as well. But it also adds redundancy to the city's transportation network. That is something that we have seen adds real economic value to the city, both in attracting employers and also from protecting us from major transportation capacity losses, as we saw this summer. So what are some of the tools that we have in our disposal? Well, we have a few things. Our baseline services includes employer outreach, development services, and also retail services. And just real briefly with each of them, employer outreach is one of the legs of the stool that we have. We work a lot with employers who both moved to Alexandria and are established here. We have about 500 employers who are within our database. And what we do with them is that we touch base with them on their commuting needs, how their employees get to and from Alexandria, and we help to build solutions with them. We have hired an employer outreach coordinator who's currently part-time with this grant opportunity. We can move that coordinator to full-time, and it would allow us to enhance the work that we do there. Retail services include what we call a mobile transit store. It is a store that sells their media, such as smart credit cards, card passes, easy pass flex passes, so that one can use the new HOT lanes that were built on I-395, and also helps with trip planning for folks who come to our stores. We have thousands of impressions every month. Those are people who ask about our services, not necessarily those who buy something, but who interact with our staff. And we have a new contractor on that is very energetic, and we're looking to enhance the outreach that they perform. And then finally, with development services, I'll get into this in a little more detail, but these are essentially us working with major property owners throughout the city to make sure that their occupants both know about the transportation options that they have, as well as influence the behavior of those who are inside of their property so that they use all modes of transportation available. So as I've mentioned, we had a pretty big year. The one of the largest programs for us this in FY19 and probably for the city in general was the platform improvement project. I think most of us are bored to death of summaries of what it was, but basically it was a summer-long closure of all four Metro Rail stations within the city of Alexandria. This impacted about 17,000 commuters in the morning coming from Alexandria into D.C., and we, WMATA and the city, certainly did not have interest in seeing all of those users going onto our roadways. And so what we did was that we worked with WMATA as well as other partners to develop alternatives. We worked with WMATA extensively on their shuttle bus program. We pushed WMATA to develop the highly successful shuttle bus from Landmark Mall to the Pentagon, which averaged about 1,000 boardings a day and was huge and saved a lot of time getting to Metro Rail for those who lived on the west end of the city. But we've also had other successes as well. We led a program that steered commuters toward the water taxi. We had almost 350 individuals who have used the water taxi and received reimbursement from the city, all paid for by a special Virginia grant for mitigation. And that pilot has, we successfully talked about that pilot with the Waterfront Commission, and they have endorsed us to council continuing those programs with the water taxi. So we've done that. We did work with making it easier for bicyclists to get to and from D.C. and Arlington through wayfinding. We coordinated a lot with funding with the state of Virginia to minimize the financial disruption to the city. And what we saw was that through most indicators that not only did the platform improvement project have minimal disruption from the user experience, but also minimal economic disruption. About 60% of businesses that were surveyed, for instance, have reported either no decline in revenue or actually a gain in revenue over the same period last year. So we did that. But what we also did was a lot of work with our own program. At this, during FY19, we thought long and hard about how we can make our program leaner, more efficient, and better at what we did. At the beginning of FY2019, the program had one staff person, myself, and was mostly contractors. We felt that that was not only very expensive, but not the best fit for the city and did not provide us with the quality that we were looking for. We have since filled two positions, additional positions for this program. An employer outreach coordinator and also another employee who focuses on administering our other programs. And then we've also re-energized our retail services. We had a contract for our retail presence. We were quite happy with them. We bid that out and we got a new contract where the contractor is not only cost less to the city, but is also more creative about how they not only sell transit passes and other items, but also work along with our staffers on outreach. So, for instance, if our employer outreach coordinator attends a commuter fair or a well-being fair at one of our many employers in Alexandria, she can and has brought along the mobile store with her so that she can tell people how wonderful Metro Rail is, and then they can buy a Smart Trip card right on the spot. Our transportation management plan program has also seen continuous improvement as well. This is where we work with property owners within the city to to enhance the transportation experience for their occupants. Our general goal is that 60% of the occupants of any given property with a transportation management plan do not drive alone to and from the site. We have seen some overall decrease, at least with residential properties. For employer properties, we saw a slight uptick. That may be because of the platform improvement project diminishing rail capacity. What we saw, we usually have send these surveys out in June every year, and that, of course, was during the Metro Rail shutdown. What we are also looking at as well is how to increase the sample size. Historically, we have had TMP coordinators have not distributed the surveys as widely as we'd like. We have seen high turnover in the people who administer these surveys for TMPs, and so we are looking long and hard at how to bring that number up. And so with that, we believe that we've delivered value for the city, certainly with a lot of economic value with the platform improvement project. We are also streamlining the services that we have, and we have a team that I feel is much more engaged in what they are doing. They're city employees. They're devoted. They're committed to making sure that we reduce single occupant vehicle numbers further. And in addition to that, we are also continuing outreach on how to enhance transportation demand management in the long term. For instance, working with the Alexandria Mobility Plan outreach to see how, for in future years, our program can be restructured. And so for what I'm asking for you tonight is for endorsement of two grant applications that we will be making to the Virginia Department of Rail and Public Transportation. The first grant application is to fund two of the staff members, and the second one is to fund the employer outreach coordinator. The Virginia Department of Rail and Public Transportation asked us to split these into two separate grants. It has to do with an accounting issue on their end. They like to report to the General Assembly how much money specifically they are spending on employer outreach activities, and that is why we need to break them into two grant applications. These are both the same local match ratio at about 20%, and this only reflects about an $8,000 increase over what we requested last year in terms of the local match. And so with that, I'm asking for your endorsement tonight. I'm happy to take any questions.
Thank you. Any questions for Thomas?
Okay. Yeah, I have several. Thomas, on the water taxi.
Yes.
So it's really exciting that program is going to continue. Are the hours going to be inclusive then of the commute hours?
Great question. So we are the Waterfront Commission has endorsed the water taxi starting as early as 6:30 a.m.
Good. And then the current program, I think, was partially successful because of the subsidy. Is there going to be an attempt to have a subsidy for residents, or at least a kind of a frequent use pass that would reduce the cost for commuters?
Staff is looking into a continuation of the subsidy. Mm-hmm. That is dependent on our use of CMAQ grant funding that we have that's administered by Virginia's Department of Rail and Public Transportation. We are getting the okay from them to use it for that purpose, but that's certainly our intent.
Right. And then I think you and I had talked early on in the program about provisioning for secured bike parking. Is that going to be part of this ongoing program? Because remember, at the time, in fact, I think today, there really is no secured bike parking down in that part of the city. And if a commuter was riding their bike and leaving it all day, it's slightly different than just leaving it for an hour or so. So I don't know if that has been part of your consideration of the program or not.
Sure. Just to clarify, you mean the waterfront area specifically,
correct.
Right?
Yeah.
Well, that's a great question. And from my conversations with Parks and Recreation staff who owns the site is that that's an infrastructure issue with the marina, and that will need to be considered separately. It certainly is a desire. Space is a little constrained there at the moment, and so I'm not saying that they can't happen. It's just that there's competing demands.
Yeah, I understand, but I think it would be useful to at least sort of have that in your wish list so that, you know, if this program really wants to become successful, provisioning something like that I think could help. And even though it may not happen today, just having it, you know, as a marker out there. So, for instance, there's this discussion right now about that space where the 8 parking spaces are. I've heard a great option of using that for restrooms, but maybe secured bike parking could also be thought of in that location. So I just tossed that up.
There were plans a while in the waterfront plan for a bike parking facility down in that area, and I don't know where that stands now with the current design of the waterfront. But
so I know
there
were
original plans for a more secure bike parking.
Yeah, they put the bike racks in with the fix-it station, but you know those are great for the 2-hour kind of visit. But,
yeah, there were originally plans
right.
for something
yeah.
more.
Yeah, but anyway, I think that if that could get kind of plugged in there. And then on the retail services, how do you think the move towards the apps like the Smart Trip app and then Dash's app is going to impact the retail operation of the van?
Sure. So we are shifting the retail operations away from purely selling Fair Media to more of a concierge-style planning
yeah.
service. We've been working with them on that shift, and I think the apps will provide further impetus for them.
And then my last question relates to the vehicle. Does the city own that vehicle, or is that acquired through the contract?
The contractor owns that vehicle.
So yeah. This, to me, seems like a really great place to maybe have a contractor next time around provide an electrical vehicle.
Okay.
Particularly if you're going out and touching people, actually getting to see an electrical vehicle. So, you know, Carolyn mentioning that they're going to be at Earth Day again, but this might be a nice way for the city to start showing people, because I assume the vehicle probably only hangs around in the city. It doesn't journey outside of the boundaries very frequently, if at all?
Well, it's mostly in the city. It's at night it goes to a site in Maryland.
Right. But even if it did, I think that would still be within the range of an electrical
sure.
vehicle. Right. So I toss that out also as something as you when you look at the next contract on that to maybe have that be a kind of a thought that how much more would it cost to do that?
Of course.
Kind of thing, so.
Just have a couple questions. At first, I mean, congrats on during the Metro shutdown. I mean, given your small staff, I thought you guys did an amazing job. You packed way more than your small size. You had a lot of punch there, so congrats for that. But I was curious in terms of working with neighboring jurisdictions, because I know I used to work across the street from the commuter store in Arlington. And I'm not real familiar with their setup, but I know it's similar in terms of how they operate. And, you know, with DC and some of the American jurisdictions, I'm just curious as to if there's a sharing of best practices, and I know I think that you mentioned here you're talking about refining your metrics. I know this was a special year this year because of the shutdown, but I'm just curious if, you know, it seems like that would be a good opportunity to kind of work on defining and improving and tweaking metrics as you move forward. And I'm curious as to what kind of communication there is.
Well, thank you. That's a very good question. We talk frequently with our partners at Arlington County and other jurisdictions through a number of forums. The commuter store is one example that you brought up. Many jurisdictions have something similar, and we do share information about how those stores operate, what they consider important to them. And then what we also do is that we have, we work on several different regional projects of a regional scope. Platform Improvement Project was one of them, of course, but there's a few others. For instance, we've been working with them on transportation demand management related to the I-395 corridor. VDOT recently installed an HOT lane, and as part of that had offered incentives for carpoolers and vanpoolers all up and down the corridor. We, of course, were a part of that, and we participated with Arlington, Fairfax, and also the DOD to get those incentives out. We're doing a similar program with I-66 that's open to all commuters who use that corridor. We also do work continuously with the DOD on various programs they have.
And a question.
Yes.
Thank you for the presentation. That was quite useful. You presented it to us a few times, and I had learned about this program over the time that I've been on the commission. And one thing that's happened at least in the recent couple of years that's probably changed sort of your approach to certain things has been the introduction of micromobility, the scooters and electric bikes and those kinds of things. And I was curious, kind of, can you give an estimate of how much of your resources that takes up then? Do you know? Is it hard to say?
Sure. This is not as much of my expertise, because this is actually managed by other staff within the city. My understanding is that the city has been the city just approved phase two of the micromobility pilot, and I think that what we are doing as staff is waiting to see how that plays out and how that and what kind of useful information we can get from the pilot program before we incorporate that into other programs. That's a view that's also shared by Virginia's Department of Rail and Public Transportation. See micromobility as one of many trends this decade in mobility that may or may not have sticking power, and also, at least from their perspective, it's inconclusive as to whether it replaces single occupant vehicle trips.
Thank you.
I have one question.
Yes.
Mine's related to one of the grants, the applications, the employer outreach. Is the program similar to what you've been doing, or is there anything new going in there? And I was actually, my question is more related to the EAP, the Environmental Action Plan, and one of the, I have it right in front of me, let me see, midterm actions was about encouraging people who work in Alexandria to discourage or give disincentives for parking employee programs. So I was wondering if that was a part of your program that you'd be running that, and I could read the midterm action in full if that helps, but we have by FY 2028, encourage people who work in Alexandria to use sustainability mobility options by developing policies that discourage employee parking. Example, limiting monthly parking subsidies, prohibiting retail employees to park long-term at parking meters, and provide cash incentives in lieu of providing employees free parking. And so I was just kind of curious if that would be part of this particular grant, or is that a part of the your role generally?
Great question. So the employer outreach grant that I presented tonight would be specifically to fund the employer outreach coordinator. It would move the position from part-time to full-time. That being said, I certainly share the EAP goal of I don't want to go on the record saying disincentivize, pardon, but I certainly share the goal of making other options more attractive. We as staff have discussed ways to do that, both inside and outside the Go Alex program. It certainly seems like it would be a multi-program approach. A lot of this would involve parking supply as well, which there would be other that would involve other programs within TNES. But we've also discussed how Go Alex can be involved with this as well, and I'm hoping that we can have an update on that within the next 6 months.
Okay. Great, thanks.
Any other questions?
I just one suggestion on the slide where you talk about the retail services, and you mentioned that you're kind of going towards more of a concierge model.
Yes.
Particularly as you give this presentation to City Council, you might want to nuance that a little bit, which is recognizing that there is this movement towards apps and what this service is really kind of spinning around, because that isn't really captured up there at the moment, and I think that might be a useful add to that.
Okay. In the absence of any other questions, do we have a motion to endorse the two grant applications that the city staff is proposing?
You go ahead.
Okay, so we have a motion.
I'll second.
And a second. Okay. Any discussion? Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Adopted? Okay. Any opposed? Nay. Ayes have it. The next item on the agenda would be the fiscal year 2021 DRTP state aid grant application.
Thank you very much. Oh,
excuse me. There was one typo in the letter. I don't know if this is still draft or not, but in the last paragraph, I think it's the third sentence, this TDM program is aligned with and supports the Alexandria Transportation as opposed to support.
I think, can we do an incorrection on that?
Yeah.
If you have a black pen, this is a blue, you can add the S, and I'm not sure how carefully.
We have the letter without the placeholder.
Yes. I can find that's right.
Okay.
So the next item is the FY21 DRPT state aid grant applications. just to give you a little bit of background, this DRPT stands for the Department of Rail and Public Transportation. And these grants are annual grants that we apply for every year to support DASH operations and costs. This year we hope to apply for the operating assistance, of which $26 million is eligible, and a technical assistance grant for $150,000. To give you some context, last year we also applied for operating support, and then we applied for capital assistance as well. We're not applying for capital assistance because of differences in between fiscal years and the way DASH is procuring buses. So Again, the total eligible expenses for the operating assistance is $26 million, which does include the DOT paratransit program. There's essentially no way that we will be awarded the full $26 million. The way it works is that there's one big state pot, and then DRPT allocates all of that money to all of the state's transit providers based on a formula. So just to give you an idea, last year we received about $4.2 million for our total program, which is about 20%, just over 20% of our eligible costs. The technical assistance grant of $150,000, it does require a local match of $75,000. This is for a state-mandated transit agency strategic plan, which is due at the end of FY22. Basically, every transit agency must complete the strategic plan. It's similar in scope, I think, to the transit development plan, which was completed, I think, in 2017, and then there's smaller annual updates every year. So this will be, you know, again, kind of a very broad effort. However, much of the work was already completed by the Transit Vision Study and will be completed with the Alexandria Master Plan. But there will be additional analyses such as financial modeling and things like that. So that's why we are requesting technical assistance from DRPT for this. So then the request of Transportation Commission action would be to approve the resolution for these grant applications and then authorize the city managers to submit the applications.
Any questions?
I have a question.
Sure.
So you apply for the grant for the 150. We approve this. You apply for the grant, and then during the budget exercise, if the city says, "Nah, we don't want to actually pony up $75,000. We'll only pony up $50,000." Does that then decrease the amount the state would give, or are you left then trying to convince city council that that was a bad decision, or when they approve the $150,000, are they essentially blessing the $75,000 commitment?
Yes.
Okay.
The last one. Yes.
So that's really one of their pieces of the decision, then, is to just sort of swallow and say, "Yeah, we're going to add that to the budget."
Well, kind of. I mean, this is something that the city and DASH have to do anyway.
Right.
And so, in applying for this, we are potentially saving $75,000.
Got it.
Any other questions? Okay. Do I have a motion to approve the DRPT State Aid Grant applications as presented?
I'll make a motion.
Okay, thank you. We have a second. Any discussion? Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, motion carries. This is the one.
Okay, I am here to talk to you all tonight about King Street Place, formerly known as Lower King Street, formerly known as 100 Block of King Street, and all the various iterations of this plan that the city has been talking about for the past 15 years. We are talking about the 100 Block of King Street, so between Lee Street and Union Street in the pedestrianization of this block. So a few months ago, City Council directed staff to develop a pilot program for closing this block to vehicles during what staff has defined as the pilot period between April and October of next year, and Friday evenings through Sunday. So that's going to be closed to vehicular traffic. So since council gave staff this direction, we've been doing a lot of background work on the technical elements of this. So confirming the available space. So what you're seeing here is the yellowish orange is where there's existing outdoor dining. We worked with fire to confirm what was needed for emergency vehicle access. We discussed strategies of how we would implement this and determined we would implement it through a modified special events permit. We have been discussing the minimum elements required for success. So this was, there was a pilot program in 2000.
Early 2000.
Early 2000, I should know that. And there wasn't overwhelming support to continue it. And so what we have been saying is, well, if we're going to do this, we need to figure out what are those minimum elements required to have a successful pilot.
That project you talked about, is that the same area, all the way up to the...
That one might have been the 200 block also.
Yeah, it included both blocks. Yeah.
It was a much shorter period.
Yeah, yeah.
We've also been talking about maintenance and what is required for maintenance, which is also a minimum element for success. We don't want trash all over the streets. And then, of course, budget. We've also been talking about the trolley and how that would be routed. We've worked with Dash. We've gone out. I rode Dash with them as we drove the bus around to see where we might need to remove parking and which routes would be the most successful. We talked about a number of different options. So in 2015, there was a Lower King Street multimodal feasibility study. That process really involved a ton of community engagement, and we did through that study look at different trolley options, one of which was to just stop at Market Square. But that was really looking at the 200 block and the 100 block, and we determined that with this project, because it was only the 100 block, we felt more of a need to get the trolley down to the waterfront, particularly with the new elements of the waterfront, the new park, and kind of a desire to bring people down to experience that place. So the preferred trolley routing option is to go down King Street and then turn north on Lee, Cameron, and then loop back around on the Strand into the unit block like it does right now.
Hillary, would you rather I say the questions till the end?
Go ahead.
Okay. So one of the issues right now with Union Street is it can be very crowded with cars, mm-hmm. and so by closing off that one block of King Street, I can't imagine that Union Street is actually going to lose cars in the process. So have you guys talked about what the impact of traffic will be on this route that you're now?
Well, because it's only in the weekends, the traffic volumes, and I have pulled up here the Lower King Street study. You should probably clip some of these graphics for this presentation, but I pulled this up earlier because I thought you might ask this, Casey, or somebody. The volumes in this area, and about 75% of the movements in this area are actually pedestrians.
I was going to say.
So, let's see here. The volumes.
I know, so but I think there's going to be more pedestrians.
We've
so
got
I think
about
any
250 cars that are going down that block, and most of the cars are going down there because they don't know not to. It's not a comfortable place to drive because there are so many people, so... Because Old Town is a grid, we think those cars will disperse. We don't think it's going to have major impacts on Union Street. We are hoping more people will park in garages, and I think that's kind of an intent so that people aren't circling to find on-street parking, which is a major reason cars are even on this block. So working with the parking garages to make sure that we're getting people into the garages.
So then maybe on your previous slides, the goals is to try to figure out how to... encourage that particular effort, because I think that is going to make this much more successful, because cars or bikes trying to transit Union Street, which I would believe is going to be an uptick in pedestrians, will just make that even worse of a situation for probably everybody.
Right, there could potentially be more cars down there, or cars could decide I'm going to park at Market Square or one of the other garages and not even because now they can't get down there from King, not even venture down to the waterfront. So it's one of the things where we're certainly not going to do an expensive traffic model for this because there are so few vehicles and there is a grid where they can disperse. It's something we'll kind of just have to see and we'll monitor, and that's part of the pilot to determine where are people going and what are the impacts of this, so that if there is a permanent a closure at some point in time, we have that information. So that's data that we'll collect during the pilot.
What kind of feedback are you getting from the businesses and Keep going.
Plug-in has a trolley slide, and we'll talk about that. The next slide is businesses, and here you go. Okay, so the bluish purple periwinkle is those are dining at restaurants, and then the retail businesses here on the block are the ones in yellow. We've been talking to the businesses a lot. There's general support for this. We talked to them initially very early on about what their concerns were with the project, and the most frequently cited concerns are how do we accommodate deliveries, valet parking. A couple of the restaurants have valet parking, mobility for handicap or seniors, which is one of the reasons that we do want the trolley to go all the way down to the waterfront instead of stopping at Market Square. You do have a grade in the hill. And then safety in terms of bollards and preventing vehicles from entering the space, and then how do you delineate with the restaurants and the requirements for alcohol and liability. So those were the things that they initially came to us when we first went out and said, here's what we're thinking, what are your concerns, how do we make sure that we work those into the plan. So our conceptual design is really, it addresses most of these issues. So for the businesses on the north, they have plenty of room in the alley to the north of Fayette Alley for deliveries. Right now there are some businesses that employees are parking there, so we are working with them to figure out what are the restrictions, the parking restrictions that should be in the alley so that police can better enforce what's happening there. The southern alley is a little bit more narrow, and there are challenges when somebody is there making a delivery. It's hard for another delivery vehicle to get around them, so it's kind of a first-come, first-serve thing, but we're looking at a space for deliveries on Lee Street, and then also thinking about where the valet would go. Right now it's in front of the wharf, and what is this? I can see it on the wall, but not on the screen, my little dot.
Right.
Yeah, it's going away. So that's where it is now, and we're looking again at Lee Street, but also one of the concerns as we've talked to the businesses more is that Uber Eats and Grubhub and all of those food delivery services are really popular. They're getting a lot of use. So thinking about, you know, where do we accommodate those vehicles and how do we work with them on this? And it actually creates an opportunity for kind of an interesting pickup drop-off space pilot that we can monitor throughout this to see, is this something we'd want to do in other areas of the city? It's a pretty fun project. There's lots of cool elements to it. So as you'll see with this, we're calling this the swoosh design. And it was, originally we started looking at like how much space are restaurants getting on each side, considering that we need 20 feet of emergency vehicle access. So really, if you break it up, it's only about 8.5 feet on each side. But the retailers, their desire was to have pedestrians closer to their business. And because we had big retail blocks at each end, we started looking at this. It was more of a swoosh, and now it's evened out a little bit. We're still calling it the swoosh. Where some of the restaurants at the corner actually get more dining space than others, because then the retail get the pedestrians closer to the building, and then but we also get the outdoor dining space. And that was something that we heard during the multimodal feasibility study. Outdoor dining space was something that was a value, and something that those different options that they were looking at that time were kind of trying to address that. And I actually had it pulled up here. Pedestrian, extra pedestrian space, extra dining space. So one of the kind of components of this is because we had to have a very quick staff turnaround on this project, we've been working directly with the businesses. We went to the Waterfront Commission earlier this week, but we already did a lot of the engagement. We had a huge engagement process, so we're really trying to use a lot of the values that were identified through that process and trying to make sure we're incorporating them into this design. So it was increased walking space, increased outdoor dining and retail, provide direct and efficient trolley service, minimize impacts to residential streets, and improve user comfort at intersections. So this is our general design. So just to touch on some of the required elements for successful implementation, barriers are really important for safety, particularly ones that can block vehicles intentionally or unintentionally trying to enter the space. Tables, chairs, and shade, paint to kind of delineate the asphalt a little bit, lighting, and then maintenance. So we just pulled a couple graphics to show different options of things that we're thinking about, very conceptual, but different types of barriers you might see. So we might have some removable bollards that really block that space where vehicles could go, but kind of highlighted by planters. So if a fire truck needed to get in, they could quickly unscrew the bollards and get in. They don't have to push big planters around, but the space is accented with planters throughout the area. Tables and chairs, depending on the type of space, there's different options available. Right now we're talking to the restaurants and kind of having the conversation about whether the restaurants want to provide the tables and chairs themselves for their own space, or whether if the city provides it and then it becomes a public space. So most of the restaurants want to provide their own tables and chairs, have a private space. We're discussing fees and all of that with them right now, but we do think there's still options along the corridor where we could have city space that would provide kind of more public seating for people that just kind of want to hang out. Street paint is important. This is one we've been thinking about. This is just one concept, but it actually is pretty neat. And thinking about something like this kind of aligns a little bit with, the waterfront. This image is supposed to represent kind of water, but then you have your lines of your contour lines. If you think about like the waterfront and our history with mapping and survey and Alexander, there's a lot of cool things that we could do to delineate the space and make it look different, but also reinforce where pedestrians should be and where vehicles can be. Process notes, so updates to you all and the Waterfront Commission this month. We want to do an update to City Council in January and get their feedback on our concept plans, and then we would like to come back in January with get some endorsements from you and the Waterfront Commission, maybe have a public hearing at the Transportation Commission just to have that additional option for the public. City Council would bring it to them in February. We would bring it to the Traffic and Parking Board after Council approval in February, and then March is when we would go for a special events permit. A couple things we're talking about, I'm going to go back to the concept, is actually removing parking all the time. We originally started with, we bring all this stuff out every Friday, we take it up every Sunday. It's very expensive, it's hard on the furniture, we have to figure out storage, and when we started talking to the businesses, particularly if it's their space and they're bringing out the furniture, they were like, yeah, just remove it all the time. We could allow vehicles all the during the week, and then the weekend it would be pedestrian space. But to remove that parking all the time really does provide a benefit. It makes it a lot easier, the pilot, and to really see how it functions. Now, I will say that the waterfront brought up, why don't you just remove vehicles all the time? So every time we talk about this, people are like, more, do this, here, add this. It is a pilot, and there could be the opportunity of thinking about maybe for some of this pilot, we do remove vehicles all the time during the week and see how it goes. That's a pilot within a pilot to really test out the space and see what works. So that was something that the Waterfront Commission did talk about yesterday, and I wanted to bring up with you all. We still have a long way to go. This is very conceptual. We still need feedback from city management, but this is a project that Transportation Environmental Services, Planning and Zoning, DPI, and Parks and Rec, and Visit Alexandria is kind of the core team. We're all working together very closely on this to kind of figure out how we would design this, how it will go. And right now we're figuring out a lot of just trying to work out the main logistics, and we'll get deeper into the design once we have a little bit more guidance. But we wanted to come to the boards and commissions and get some of that initial feedback from you all.
Ask a question.
Sure.
What about we do a pilot and a pilot going up to Fairfax? Is that not doable? Or? Why?
200 block?
Yeah.
So the challenge with the 200 block, and this is something the Waterfront Commission brought up as well, the 200 block, it's a lot steeper.
Yes.
So it's a totally different element of design and what we could do, and it's something we would certainly think about during this pilot, because there are really cool things that you could do if you wanted to put some money into it. But I think right now, in order to get this done in the timeline that we've been given, we wanted to focus here. They also brought up the unit block, which there are options for the unit block if we wanted to remove those parking spaces. And the unit block is right in front of Starbucks. There's two
where the bike parking,
spaces.
Oh.
There's bike parking. We had originally had planned in 2013 to do a parklet there. But I mean, there's options for that. It's something we could, again, consider or do a pilot within a pilot to provide more public space. That was something the Waterfront Commission asked for. I know councils asked about it, too. So I think it's something where we have to kind of flesh out the details and see what can we accomplish in the time frame we have. But the 200 block's a little bit harder. I will say I believe that within a couple of years, there are plans for full reconstruction of this street and integrating it into the waterfront plan. So by having a pilot, it gives us the opportunity to see what works with this space and think about, okay, when we come to rebuild it, what's the ultimate condition we want here? And I think the 200 block can be included in that.
One more question, well, two more questions. You still haven't come up with what's going to be the split between just restaurants, seating, and public space? You're still working through that?
So most of the restaurants so far want their space to be private. One thing that I think is actually super cool is we've been working with Virginia Tech on kind of thinking about a parklet program. And so this is something that a component of it that we want to pilot with them. And we initially reached out to the two ice cream shops to say, what if we put a parklet here? It'd be full-time, it'd be in the space. It's public seating, but the Virginia Tech School of Architecture is now working with the two ice cream shops on how they would design that public space. So I think that's pretty cool. So that would be additional public space, but then there's also opportunities in front of some of the retail stores to do like possibly like a lounge space or something like that. But there's still room to figure out what that is. And then also with that space, change it up throughout the pilot to see what resonates with people, and then additionally programming of the space.
One more thing. At Union Street, and I guess at Lee as well, are you going to think about what pedestrian amenities or signage you can do, whether it's a pilot or not, just for good? I mean, right now, mm-hmm. Union King is a mess, I think.
Yeah,
so,
I think the benefit of this is that you don't have cars going through, so you can see where the pedestrian kind of crossing area is, and now pedestrians can cross in that space.
Yeah.
We certainly, you know, still have, there's not shown on here, but our normal crosswalks and standards. Yeah, but we've talked to police about additional presence down here, and I think that would be important, particularly in the beginning, to see mm-hmm. how people are using it and where there might be safety issues and things we need to address.
I just think, like, I mean, at Union King, you can just put more paint down or something to delineate, you know, where pedestrians should be safe, like mm-hmm. on a crosswalk. So, I mean, stuff like that,
mm-hmm.
that can be done in, you know, relatively.
Yeah, that's something we can look at. I believe there's already high visibility crosswalks there. So, I think as part of the full reconstruction, having that as a raised intersection is something that's
yeah.
been in the plans.
Yeah.
But it's that, again, that's like a full construction project.
I have a question about the parking garages in the area. Sorry. Is it a follow-up from that?
No, I was more kind of, I had my own question.
Oh, okay. Sorry. the parking garages that are around, that the cars would then be directed that way, is there anything being done for outreach on that, where those garages are, that would make them more visible? Or I didn't know if the costs are going to change, or if they're working with the garages at all. And I don't think they're very expensive right now on the weekends. But
they're not. And we have talked about a couple things. One is having the ability for businesses to validate for a discount for those garages. There is wayfinding to the garages, but one of the other things that we've been working on with some of the garage vendors, and then particularly in the city garages, is how we can get technology like Spot Hero and Best Parking, so people can reserve their spaces ahead of time, and instead of circling around trying to find parking, they go directly to the garage. Because when you go to those apps and you see how cheap it is to just park there, you're a lot more inclined to. I mean, that's what I do when I go into DC. I don't want to drive around trying to figure it out. I'm like, I'm going to pick a garage and I'm going to put my GPS and I'm going to go straight there instead of driving around, because the garages are actually really inexpensive in this area, particularly on the weekends. People just don't know it.
And that was going to be my follow-up question. I loved the idea. I don't know how it would function. I don't have another example in my head, but of not having parking during the week as well, just as a, I feel like it would indicate, like, potentially trigger to people that something's different here, there's a reason, and and maybe that would also start highlighting those other parking places for during the week as well. But I didn't know if it would function. I'm curious how it will function if there is a big change in pricing or... you know, the purposes people are coming and finding parking during the week. I'm guessing, though, it's still short-term parking in that first block, though, right?
Yeah, I mean, there's the garages that are, I believe, $10 and $10 for the full day.
Oh, wow.
$2.50
even
an
during
hour.
The week?
Yeah, during the week they're more than they are on the weekends because of people that work down there. I mean, it's 25 spaces. People would have to find another place to go. I mean, I think the intent is that people would hopefully not drive all the way down here, that they find parking
somewhere else. Great. Thanks.
I just had my question is regarding kind of what was learned from the last time we attempted this. Apparently, it seems to be understood that it wasn't very successful when we tried this before. I'm guessing that the information of kind of how it was implemented and everything else is available to this city. Can we ensure to kind of learn from the mistakes that were made? Do we know what those mistakes were?
People know. I don't know off the top of my head what I, because I wasn't here, but what I have heard, it was a short pilot. I want to say it rained. I think some of the big pushback were residents that were worried that people that were parking on those blocks were going to park in their street. And that was actually, when we did the Lower King Street multimodal feasibility, that was a big component of it. And one of the end results was that we would not do anything until we finished the Old Town parking study, because that was going on at the same time. And that was a big concern of residents. There are these 25 spaces that people are now going to park here. And so one of the reasons we're moving this forward is because we did finish that study and showed that parking garages were vastly underutilized and there was a ton of space, and so that's where people needed to go. So we felt like we could kind of bring this forward again. I think some of the businesses weren't on board at that point in time, and now with so many people going down to the waterfront and it just being a different place, they're seeing the value again. So.
It wasn't emergency access an issue? I thought I heard that as well.
There was also deliveries, so the stores were really feeling irritated by the pilot because there was no accommodation for deliveries to be made, and so that was a rub for them. But it sounds like this time you've got the businesses on board from the get-go. So I think that helps.
How short was it?
6 weeks. I mean, it really wasn't. It wasn't a very long period.
What's the proposed duration of this? I didn't catch.
April to October.
April to October.
And basically all weekend.
Yeah.
Friday to Sunday.
Friday night to
Sunday. We're proposing, to be determined, I mean, council can decide what they want, we're proposing removing parking all the time, though. So the extra dining would be out all the time.
Right. Mm-hmm. And have you done any estimate in terms of the cost to the city on this? I mean, what is it? Am I sitting ahead of myself again? Is there a slide on that, or is it still early?
There's not a slide on that. We actually, because of privatizing the space and letting the restaurants put out their own tables and chairs, and leaving it out all the time, it saves a lot on our maintenance costs. So we had originally said like $77,000 for the summer. I think we're down to somewhere in the 50s for maintenance. A lot less money for tables and chairs, but we think lighting is really important. So the city's willing to invest some in lighting of the block to make sure it looks like a different space, and then the paint is a cost that we're looking at. So
the ballards, I mean, I guess there's a big difference.
The ballards
if you
are
get
actually
the
pretty expensive to get the kind that kind of go into the ground and screw out, but that was something the fire department requested, so we want to honor their wishes with that. So
I have a couple. Are you finished?
Yeah.
A couple questions. There's also the lost parking revenue, isn't there? Because if you lose those 25 spaces,
it's about $90,000.
Yeah. So I think this is a great idea, and I like others, I think it'd be great if we could extend it even further, just because I think, you know, from a pedestrian's perspective, that's it. You know, where's the rest of my walking experience? I mean, it's a walkable city, but it just, this is such a cool idea for pedestrians that I think it's should be a home run without too much problem. However, because I think it's going to be popular, and I think not everybody is necessarily going to be driving, what are the thoughts in terms of trying to accommodate both the bicycle as well as the scooter? So there are currently some bike racks along this stretch of the of the street, not many. I already know that the corral can get full on a weekend. The racks that are on the temporary park get filled up. And so I'm not sure if maybe it's worth looking at one or two of the garages. And so maybe this could be a cost to the city of provisioning some bike parking within the garages, you know, with wayfinding then directing cyclists to those locations. It might help mitigate bikes just becoming junk within this space, or, you know, people trying to lock up their bikes somewhere where you don't really want them to be locking the bikes up. But I think that also could be true with the scooters. I know there's going to be corrals, and there's a couple around, but that it might be something to think a little bit harder about with those two things. One concern, particularly for the lower part of that, because I think the flooding sometimes does come there. Have you guys had any discussion about what we do if it floods?
The businesses will be in charge of picking up the furniture if they don't want it to
float away.
Right. Okay. So, but you guys have at least...
We're working on an MOU with the businesses, and there are the maintenance component to that.
I had one more, but go ahead. If it's a follow-on, go ahead.
Okay.
Okay. So the other, and I also think this is cool, and is the paint on the street. I presume that the intent would be that that would be permanent, at least through the pilot, that you you wouldn't be planning to take it up every week and repaint.
Be permanent.
But on the other hand, so that could actually be kind of a cool activity where, especially if you've gotten rid of the, you know, the parking and all, that, you know, maybe groups can come in and, you know, a grant or something to paint on a Friday night kind of thing. But the fact that it would be permanent, I kind of like also. Would there be any thought to, and I realize this doesn't meet code, but colorizing the crosswalks to sort of give a sense of place then to the...
Well, what we're looking at is, you know, where the bollards would go. And, the hope is that, so within, people wouldn't even be in the crosswalk because they're going to be on the inside, but it depends on what happens with the space during the rest of the week, where the crosswalks need to go, and how to do that. We have not talked about coloring the crosswalks outside of this space yet.
But I think that, again, could be just kind of one of those really marking the spot as, you know, this is the place to kind of pull people to. So my last question is down there at Union and King Street. So with the bollards there, it's a natural inclination for the pedestrians not to actually go to the crosswalks, but to walk just directly across the middle of the street, which sort of argues for the unit block to sort of be accommodated somehow. But if that's not done, I think that's a potential issue for wanting to have the police there, because I think you could then have, instead of trying to cope with a vehicle getting past pedestrians just in a crosswalk, now trying to get past the entire length of it, which would almost make it a barricade, which doesn't necessarily upset me, but it would be more challenging for vehicles. And my last question relates to bicycles then, because that is the bike route from the Mount Vernon Trail. So maybe as part of this pilot, it might be worth an effort to try to better mark the Royal Street route to try to keep cyclists from just the ones passing through, passing through there, and just creating even more conflict for this very successful pedestrian experience.
I think those are all really good points. We'll take that into consideration. You know, I think at the unit block, it almost, there's a lot we want to look at with the pilot, and I think it almost, like, what you're talking about creates a shared street space, and it'll be interesting to see how people navigate, because typically those spaces are actually safer because everybody's
yep.
going so slowly.
Right.
So it'll be interesting to observe and see how that plays out. But we will also have those.
Well, the plus is you're not coping with multiple turns and everything
right.
there. So it's only this is the majority will be the traffic movement on Union as opposed to trying to make turns. So that should help a little.
And if I remember correctly, most of the crashes that did happen down there were turns.
Yep.
Mm. You're eliminating that movement.
Yep.
Just a question. You mentioned early on about disabled, access for disabled, and my mother is in a wheelchair. We bring her down there quite a bit on the weekends, and I'm just curious. There's already, you know, there are some some handicapped parking spots, but I mean, I would hope you guys would plan either on Lee or on Union to have some additional spots set aside, or are there already?
Well, this pickup drop-off space is not just for Uber, Lyft, and
okay.
valet, so that is a space where it could be a pickup drop-off at
okay.
any time. There is a handicapped space on Union right just north of King Street now that would need to be relocated to accommodate the trolley turning
okay,
movement
right, right.
because the trolley would now turn and go back up on Cameron, but we are looking to just relocate it a little bit further south on Union Street. We weren't
okay.
looking for any additional, but there is that pickup drop-off space that's right there for
use.
That
okay.
yeah, accessibility.
One last thing. You're calling this a pedestrian zone, so I'm assuming it's a sidewalk, so no moving vehicles there, like bikes or scooters?
Right, that's right.
Yeah, so I presumably it'd be signs saying walk
yeah.
your bike.
Okay, that's cool.
Mm-hmm. So during the week, though, if you open that up to traffic, how does two-way traffic work?
It's 20 feet.
So between the...
the blue space would be...
It's 20 feet wide, so wide enough for cars to carefully move
yeah.
or...
Okay.
I'm an
emergency vehicle, so
right.
yes, it is 20 feet wide.
And if you put that curve in there, it'll make them go slowly.
Yep.
That's part of it, too. Mm-hmm. It's almost like a mini
traffic
coming. Just a comment. I'm very excited by this just because I've heard about that 6-week pilot. I don't know how long it was, but this has come up over and over again, and I just think it's really cool that the city's giving it a shot, and it sounds really organized and thought out and just hitting all the pieces and all the stakeholders, so I'm really looking forward to seeing how this runs. And
yeah, it'll be pretty cool. I mean, I think Visit Alexandria has been heavily involved, and they're thinking about programming, and some of the restaurants and the businesses that we've talked to were like, oh, well, what if we did this, or what if we did this? Like, could we do a mural, or how do we make this like an Instagrammable place with they've got cool ideas, so I think it's really fun. That's why we decided to call it King Street Place, to call it it's the place, right? So
200 blocks can get jealous really quick.
Yeah, it's a pretty cool project, so it's fun, and I think we've worked out a lot of the kinks and the logistics, and the restaurants are pretty supportive, so
cool.
Yeah, pretty fun.
Any other questions? We appreciate your insight in trying
yeah.
to improve the quality of life in that area of Alexandria. Great. Thank
well
you.
Well thought out.
Okay. If anyone has any items that they'd like to pull off the consent menu for staff to address, please share that with me now.
A question about the smart scale. That was on here, right? Yeah, it was. Did we send a final letter forward for the smart scale? We did. Okay.
It sounds right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Did
I chair,
did it get circulated? Can we have a copy? Is it or posted?
I emailed it around.
Oh, you did. I remember
yeah.
seeing the proposed changes. That was the final one then.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
I didn't realize that. That's what I.
Oh,
okay.
Yeah, I didn't receive any comments on it. So.
Okay.
Yeah.
Got it. Thank
mm-hmm.
you.
Yeah, and as a follow up to that, the Office of Innovation, OIPI, I forget exactly what it stands for, but they're the ones kind of in charge of it. They're proposing to change some of their proposed changes to more reflect some of our comments and probably comments from other more urban jurisdictions as well. So stay tuned.
Great. Mm-hmm. You can bring it back up at APC. We know we did not send you a letter and
That was not intended to. Okay. It was bad timing for us to get back to you quickly. So if there is something else, please bring it up.
Okay, sure.
Okay. Would anyone like to discuss any of the items? Yes.
I'd like to ask at least one question on the dockless mobility.
Okay. Please proceed.
So I know what staff had proposed, which was to have a small area of the city sidewalks blocked off from cycling, from the scooter usage. City Council decided to apply that across the board. I thought what I heard as part of the discussion was shared use pass in there. And so my question is, does anyone actually understand what the shared use pass are in the city? So for instance, is the Eisenhower Avenue Trail a shared use path on both sides when you get down by the water park? You know, as a for instance, it used to be, but now do people think one side of that is a sidewalk, even though it's, you know, got asphalt? And then you've got places like around Potomac Yard where you've got the shared use path that runs kind of on both sides of that. But do some people perceive that as being a sidewalk? And so I'm not quite sure that there's a really good definition of what is going to be considered a sidewalk. If a bike is using a sidewalk, is that not shared use?
So a shared use path is, it's defined in our city code as a bikeway that is physically separated from motorized vehicular traffic by an open space or barrier and is located either within the roadway right-of-way or within a separate right-of-way. Shared use paths may also be used by pedestrians, skaters, users of wheelchair conveyances, joggers, and other non-motorized uses.
Right.
Although our... It's a good point because in the code update to council, we had that discussion and they did not take out micromobility devices so that they were not banned from using shared use paths. I would say that I think we will try and do some education. It's up to enforcement. And I think if something is an asphalt path on the side of the street, it's going to be tricky to enforce.
Yes, I know it is, but I think it's also going to be difficult for a user. So I'm cruising down the road and I'm going, is this a shared use path or not? I don't have access to this definition on the website. We don't have any markings to indicate this is a shared use path. So we have the problem for the user, but then we have a problem for the people who don't want scooters on any of these you know, places where pedestrians are, and so they're going to want to be reporting this scooter, but is it really a violation? And then I realize ignorance isn't, you know, a defense, but nevertheless, to just be setting people up without any kind of clear guidance of verboten, I think is going to be really, really tricky for people. So I don't disagree what City Council decided, but I think it's left you guys with a hard problem here.
At least with a hard problem. No. We will sign, and maybe to your point, what we need to do is, as we determine which locations we're going to sign and where we're going to put those signs, maybe in some of those areas that are a little less clear, that's where we need to be more clear about the signage.
Right.
Also, I think this is something that we can, during the course of the pilot, we'll be able to talk to people that are using them and kind of get more feedback, because it's, you know, it's a big change and we have to see what the impact of that change is. And so that's something that we'll evaluate. But I think you make a good point. And as I reread the definition of shared use path, that is another coaching.
I actually wanted to raise my hand during the discussion, but I was watching it on TV, and I knew nobody was able to see me raise my hand, because that's exactly what I was thinking at the time that was going on. But I also think, it can be addressed during the pilot, but we've still got the concerned citizens who are, you know, just don't want to see the scooters on sidewalks, and so they're just going to be reporting this stuff, and it's just continue to feed this idea that scooters won't obey. But in some instances, it's going to be hard for scooters to obey because they're not going to know what what's right and what's not in this particular instance. So yes, we can sort of shape it during the pilot program, but it still doesn't help the people who don't want to see the scooter on the sidewalk or shared use path or whatever this thing is called that my scooter is on at the moment.
We are all getting used to new technology and figuring out how to manage it, and it's a challenge for people who don't want to see it anywhere and want to spend that time reporting. But I think we're just going to have to learn our lessons as we go, and it's new, and we're trying to manage it.
Okay.
But I think you make a good point. I'm talking to the city attorney about this portion of code, and I think it's just something that we'll have to figure out how we evaluate over the course of the pilot and how we talk to users to see where their challenges are and see what we can do if we have a permanent structure.
And then somebody told me that they thought that you would actually have to sign every sidewalk.
The state code changed last year. They took out the word conspicuously from the signage, so we do have to sign, but
it could be at the boundaries of the city.
It said you have to conspicuously sign it, so that was almost every block or every couple blocks, but that word was removed from state code, so it gives us a little more leeway in judgment of where we place those signs. We're also going to be working with the scooter company, so as people open their app, like a message pops up right away saying scooter riding on sidewalks is unlawful on sidewalks now, or whatever it says. Yeah, there's going to be a big education component with this.
Right.
Okay. It's another fun challenge.
Yep. Thank you.
Any other items that the commissioners wish to discuss on the consent item? Okay. We will move on to other business. Turn it over to staff.
I want to announce that there will be elections for chair and vice chair in January. If anyone has anything to any interest, I guess let us know. I also wanted to add a point on the in January we'll also be coming out to you with a draft annual work plan. We worked on that at the retreat last year in March. But we'll come to you with a draft proposal of what you'll see every month of the Transportation Commission next year.
Can I ask a question back to you then? The current priority questionnaire survey, the deadline was extended.
Mm-hmm.
Was there an uptick from the handful that we had at our last meeting to now? So that's more than 100?
Yes, there's hundreds. I forget the exact count, but we got a good uptick in the end.
Good.
Yeah, the next AMP meeting, I'll present sort of results from all the different pop-up events and the website, and going to get some great feedback.
Was there a question, or I thought I saw a hand raised?
Oh, yeah, with regards to elections, I guess the process is the same. We can nominate somebody, we can nominate ourselves. Is that correct?
Yes.
And how would we go about it? If we don't nominate here, if I say 2 weeks from now, who would I email?
Does it happen in the moment in the meeting, or?
It can happen either way.
Okay. So I'll email you and make the chair and vice chair this way, just nominate everybody if I see.
Okay.
And I'll be on official agency travel for the next meeting on the 15th. So hopefully the vice chair will be available to conduct the meeting. Any other business? Okay, do I have a motion to adjourn? Second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Okay. Thank you, and everyone have a safe and enjoyable holiday.
Thanks, Steve, you too.
Thank you.
Who got the cookies?
I did. Do you want another one?
Yeah, I'll
take one. Anyone else want a cookie before they...
Thank you. And thank you for the recipe, but it took my brain a while. I thought somebody...